It's my pleasure to introduce David Sparrow once again for the fifth time. but his fifth opportunity to join us here at Many Rivers. He has delighted so many of us with his outrageousness, his demonstrations of energy, and I'm so delighted to have him back again here in 2001. Thank you so much.
You must stay well. It's great to be back, seeing all of these guys, Stuart. So thank you all for coming this evening, for showing up and making some kind of sharing possible. I'd like to go nice and deeply tonight, even though it appears to be just a normal evening at Many Rivers Bookstore and Tea. Just another special event. We're going to make it a super special event. Of course, through no effort of our own. So what I suggest is that we do a short meditation, just so we can ground together, so we can feel each other in the silence, the place where we can really know who we are. And I suggest we meditate for about 15 minutes, if you're up for it. It's a nice short 15-minute meditation. Again, I'd like to welcome everyone in a spirit of friendship. Because the ultimate reality is ineffable, there is an awful lot you can say about it. I think if you've studied the lives of yogis, mystics, gurus, enlightened beings, avatars, whatever, yoginis, you'll see that there have been many approaches with which to enter into the divine consciousness, the absolute. If you were to, for example, pick up a book by Swami Muktananda, Play of Consciousness, and read that account of enlightenment, you'll find something distinct and unique about the subject matter with which he speaks, the way in which he understands the topic of enlightenment, and a kind of path that is elucidated. How many people have read that book? So you'll see that it's a teaching that focuses deeply on the Kundalini Shakti, which is what? It's the manifestation and transmission of various energies in order to help a human being raise their own energy. Of course, this is all done on an internal level now. We're not talking about outer events or phenomena. We're talking about something about the very nature of energetic consciousness transmitting and then lifting the frequency so that the absolute itself can be tasted or known. But then if you read a teacher, for example, like Ramana Maharshi, say the talks and dialogues of Ramana Maharshi, how many people have read that book? You'll find an exposition of Jnana Yoga, not just an exposition of it, but someone who's actually functioning in a particular type of spiritual condition in which Jnana Yoga arises naturally as a way of spiritual transmission. In other words, it's a way in which you have a dialogue, and within that dialogue something happens, something pops, something occurs within consciousness, and what occurs within consciousness is not described as energy. It's more descriptive of a silent state of being, a state in which mental activity has ceased. A kind of transparency is pointed to, a depth in which thought cannot penetrate, and an invitation on the part of Ramana Maharshi to come into that with him. And as a third example, if you read chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita, how many people have read that? It's an exposition on devotion, on love, bhakti and parabhakti, in which the Lord Krishna is inviting Arjuna to the highest path stated by Krishna, the avatar, to his student and friend, Arjuna. The highest path being, meditate on me, Arjuna. This is the quickest way, it's the best way. Think of me, offer everything to me, flow into my being with feeling. Something that is uncharacteristic of Ramana Maharshi's way, Swami Muktananda's way. Or you can read the writings of Adidas Samraj, the late Adidas Samraj, who also talks in the same vein as Lord Krishna, as being the supreme beloved, the supreme Godhead in human form, and everything therefore to be offered to me in the spirit of renunciation. So what I'm suggesting here, the third path is the path of love, which is distinct from energy, which is also distinct from silence. Non-duality could be said to be the core of that silent path that Ramana teaches. Current could be said to be the inner core of the Nityananda or Muktananda or Kashmir Shaivistic path as was revealed through them. And in the case of Lord Krishna, it is the feeling of devotion, of love, just the way you love your pet. You love someone dearly, your grandmother or your mother or your father or your boyfriend or your husband or your wife or the tree, the flower, the sunset, the ocean. As you love those things, as you have a visceral reaction and feeling, something happens to consciousness in all three of those ways. So one of the things I want to state tonight is that I think it's time that everyone learn how to embrace and at least understand and appreciate the multifaceted approach that exists to the divine being. That no one has a copyright on this path. And that you can actually arrive at the most exalted human condition from different avenues that are characteristically different than each other. They are different pathways. Now, how is it that different pathways can arrive at the same ultimate condition? It must be that within the absolute, which is what is realized in all three cases, those structures or qualities must exist. In other words, instead of viewing the absolute as merely an empty condition of total nothingness, as in the case of the Ramana school, or in the Muktananda school in terms of Shaktipat and initiatory power and transmission of current, and in the case of divine love and worshipful paths, the flow of bhakti or divine love. Instead of simply focusing on the content of the paths as being the holders of what those descriptions possess, I suggest you consider the possibility that the entire reality is also those things, is also a state of expanded, outrageous feeling. Massive current, massive movement of ascending and descending forms of spiritual current, and the transmission of light, the non-dual light of the self. which is referred to again and again and again by Ramana Maharshi. So this is very important to me, to mention this to you, because this is really the entire movement of my own spiritual teaching, to try to serve everybody equally, no matter what path they're on. But I don't think it's a scholarly urge that I have that leads me into this area. I think it's a natural capability, for whatever reason, that was given to me at birth. And I'm not trying to tout myself as someone special or something special, but it's simply a question of being frank and identifying with the mind what's going on. And so I believe also each one of you might be headed toward a great and profound spiritual destiny. Very great, the greatest of all great destinies, of all human destinies, is to just realize what you are. And I know that there's many people on many different paths, even some people exploring multiple paths. Some are failing because of that multiple exploration, only because these paths tend to be competitive. They tend to be more like business arrangements than real spiritual teachings. The idea that one path could be supreme over another. But I think each person simply begins where they are. They simply find out what their natural disposition is, and then you pursue it. These three qualities of divine light, divine love, and prana kundalini shakti, I wanted to just open that discussion up, offer it to you as a possible way to gain deeper clarification about your own journey. I thought I would open it up now to a dialogue with many of you, I hope. Hello. Just say your first name.
Holly. When you say that those three pathways are competitive, do you mean that you couldn't be practicing all three?
No. No, what I was trying to say was that they're often presented as being competitive by the people who are embodying them or selling them or offering them.
So do you think that for some people, actually practicing all three could be a way?
I don't know of any better thing to do. Yeah. I mean, at least to become cognizant within your own spiritual experience among the distinctions between these three events. I think it's a sign of great spiritual depth and realization to be able to talk clearly about Kundalini Shakti while reserving any comment on the Absolute, which is also quite present, or on the great devotion you might feel. So each one of these has different nuances and descriptions, and that's why there's such a great body of spiritual literature, and we're lucky for that, because you know, confusion and ignorance requires sometimes multiple angles and multiple directions out of itself, right? And so, you know, go for it. Go for where your heart leads. At the same time, I think you might be able to appreciate one possible liability, which is that people will just start exploring these things intellectually and just doing comparative analysis. They'll go, okay, I've made my notes on this Shakti teacher, now it's off to the non-dualists. And of course, if somebody wants to behave like a scholar, who knows, that might be their breakthrough. That might be the way he learns to drop the pen on the floor in front of one of those teachers and say, oh my, what is this?
That's a good question.
Yes, and it could be within the confusion, within that dumb idea that you should go take notes in front of an enlightened being, that they have their tremendous surrender happen. Mm-hmm. So I've always maintained it through the back door that this comes. You try to get it, but it always comes from some ancillary viewpoint. Right?
So it helps most of all to make ourselves available and open.
Under all conditions, even when you're away from so-called enlightened teachers, just look and see what's going on. I think what you'll find is you'll have a tremendous dialogue with all beings. Another interesting topic that comes up that we really can't explore tonight, but it's maybe next year, is what does enlightenment look like? You know, what does an enlightened being look like? How do they behave? Are they always silent, peaceful? Never judging anyone. That kind of thing.
Why can't we talk about it now?
Shall we? You see, if it's all of these things I'm mentioning, then it's going to be very confusing to identify. It's going to embrace the most idiosyncratic qualities, which really leads us down an interesting path about whether holiness and awakening are the same thing. Do you agree that that's an interesting topic?
That sounds right.
Is it? Is holiness?
I don't know. Interesting to explore.
It's very interesting. That's because you're probably very deeply involved with this topic. An amateur would just want to taste it, just give it to me. But these type of considerations would come up as someone gets well seasoned on the spiritual path. What does it look like? Even Arjuna was curious in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, how does the enlightened man walk? How does he sit? You remember that passage? How does he sleep? You remember his answer. Forget it.
What was the answer?
Forget it.
That was the answer?
Essentially, you're not going to know. There's no indication.
There's no indication.
There's no indication. At least no outer indication. You know what I mean? I'm talking about stereotyping. As well as embracing a certain kind of outer lifestyle. Is celibacy requisite? Is it a requisite condition for full realization? Just asking. See what I mean? These questions come up. Yet there are paths which would insist that if it doesn't appear as celibate, it's not real. Right?
It's just interesting because before I started sitting with the enlightened, growing up as a Christian, my idea of what a spiritual person would act like is, of course, Jesus, right? Turn the other cheek and all that stuff.
Or Ramana Maharshi.
Well, I didn't know about him growing up.
I know, but it's the same thing. Do you know how he has become a kind of icon for enlightenment these days?
Well, my actual experience is of the enlightened I have sat with and you is that everyone is so different than each other, and they all blow away any preconceived idea that you may bring to the table, and they typically take an axe to it and chop it up.
Right, so it's the storybooks that turn them into a stereotype, right? It's the people who write about them and talk about them, they turn them into something specific, and that's, I think, right on.
It's interesting how people get offended when the enlightened teacher does not match their preconceived ideas.
More than upset.
Yeah.
part of realization is inspecting your own biases about what realization is. That's part of the real, genuine process of awakening, is cracking even the stereotype that you're practicing in. Showing really where its translucency is, pointing to where it starts to fragment and splinter and fall apart. A great teacher will point to where their path falls apart, not to where it holds together. Because all you'll teach is form. All you'll teach is the mind of form. You'll never get to the formless.
So, on that idea, I've been practicing the path of devotion.
Have we met before?
Only on a service base.
Okay.
But there's a conflict that arises, because if you're really devoted, anything else creates this little ripple.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
in other words, seeing another teacher, that kind of thing.
Or you're even just witnessing the empty formlessness and the light.
And then
my complete attention,
yes,
is taken away from the devoted one.
Oh my, hasn't the devoted one told you that that's what you're really supposed to be devoted to?
Are they supposed to tell me? Is that
I think you need to be let in on that at this point.
Well, I am let in on it, but the conflict is something that it seems to be made of.
Either the conflict is in your head, or the conflict is in a wrong presentation by the teacher. It's not a good teacher.
So, okay, then...
I don't even know who this is, so I don't even know who I might be criticizing,
yeah,
which is good.
Yeah, and I'm not even...
Yeah.
We're not going there.
Sure.
No, I'm just wondering about the conflict, because the conflict is where it falls apart. It's a crack, boom, out, gone.
What's gone?
Everything.
What do you mean everything? So what's the problem?
There is no problem. There's just conflict, and then boom, gone. So I was just wondering what your when you were saying the ineffable is contains what is all these different ways, all these doorways.
Yes.
So it contains conflict.
Okay, good. I get it. Yes, it does contain conflict.
And I wonder what that. I mean, I see, you know, I just...
We're having conflict now, but there's unity, too.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So, what you're asking is actually taking... The whole thing is taking place now with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is conflict.
Yes.
Excellent point. Well taken. I didn't know where you were going with that.
I didn't know where you were.
So, perturbation and conflict, attachment, desire, struggle... anticipation, all the things you're told enlightenment is not, it's in there. All of those things are in that awakened condition. There's no question about that. I'm sorry, I really know this for fact. I'm not postulating at this point. So if you think that being enlightened is being peaceful all the time, your head's up your ass. If you think it's not judging, your head is deeper up there. You really need to become very aware of the actual person you are in the context of what you've realized. I have said a lot of people, you know. If you come to me, I only have this many people at all my teachings. Somehow it's self-regulating. When 23 hits, somebody else disappears. Because I'm not interested at all in playing the game with you. I'm not playing the positivity game and the self-enhancement game and the no death, no rebirth game. I don't do any of that with people. People get very vulnerable around me, and so I too get very vulnerable around them. So much so that we become each other. That's the kind of realization that I offer and I advise to explore with those who do come. And I'll tell you, I'll know exactly what you're holding on to. This has happened so many times, in so many ways, it's frightening. it's frightening that someone will come in and say, the one thing that I'm clinging to is the thing you're deconstructing this evening. Goodbye. I never want to see you again. This happens so many times. It's conflict. It's painful for me to see that. But I have to get up here and tell the truth. Look, am I coming so that we can all just play a game together, a nice amusing game, and we can all get high together on mutual aphorisms, and you know how it works. We can all whisper nothingnesses into each other's ear. like the manifest world has never really happened here, has it, David? No, then what are we doing in this room if there's no world?
So there is a highness that happens with the energy. There's a transmission of energy. There's a raising of highness.
You have to talk to him for that. You have to talk to her for that. You can talk to Mike. Don't tell
I
me.
Can't talk to you
I know, because I have a vested interest. If you tell me whether you radiate consciousness, of course I'm going to say yes. I'm up here representing me. I'm the worst person to ask. You have to ask people who get blissed out of their minds when they're with me. The evidence isn't in me. You look in me, you're going to find whatever you need to find. If you come in with doubt and distrust, I manifest that beautifully for you, for anybody. When people come in paranoid, is he a hypocrite? I deliberately find myself acting explicitly. I create little things to make myself look hypocritical. It's beautiful. This is the best teaching. This is the best teaching.
Do you find yourself doing it?
I give you whatever you need. No, you see, you're assuming separate identity there.
Well, I wasn't assuming.
If I did, the purpose would be in the entirety of consciousness without any separation there.
Okay.
See, the non-separation can permeate right into the egoic level. Is this your question? This is another million-dollar question. You're good. You're very good. This is another billion-dollar question, as big as our military budget. As big as our Pentagon budget, a multi-billion-dollar question here. Then they tell us they can't afford health care. Let's not go into it. What was your question?
So, is this where we are one?
See, here's my question to you. Does non-separation, how many people are really into non-separation? I am, honestly. Jnana yoga, non-duality, absorption in the self. Huh? What's the matter? Why are you waving your hands?
You asked if people were into it. I was waving both hands.
And it's, you know from your own experience whether it's worthwhile or not. Don't listen to me. You just stay fixed in your own consciousness. Don't let me take away your jewel.
You couldn't possibly.
Good.
Could you take anything away from me? Possibly.
Oh, I take a lot. This is a language game, though. This is semantics. I know where you're coming from. I honor you. Okay? What was the question again?
It's fun.
This to me is a $1 billion question. This is a lot of fun. If it's not fun, it's not real. Can non-separative awareness enter into the egoic structure? So let's get rid of this idea about killing the ego and being free. Is that what you're used to, that kind of stuff? Tell the truth. Don't back out. Don't back out. You're right up against that bookshelf. There's no way for you to back.
No, the only part of me that's against this bookshelf is the physical body.
You don't really exist, do you? Tell me the truth. At what point did you stop existing? And who were you before that? So my question remains...
You're moving along pretty quickly.
Oh, I always do it this way.
Before giving me a chance to respond. So okay. First of all, I'd say I've always existed. Time is an illusion. Time and space are complete illusions. I've always existed.
What do you mean time and space are an illusion? When you say that, what exactly do you mean?
They are temporary, and we see it. The time-space continuum is a hypnotic...
Okay.
Very powerful.
I don't understand why you would say something that is transient is illusory.
Because that's one way of describing it. It's like a thought that flows through your mind. Is it permanent or is it transitory? That's a classic Eastern mystical definition of talking about what is impermanent, what is permanent.
Right.
I have always existed. So have you. So is everybody here. Physical reality has always existed. Always. This moment in time.
Physical reality has always existed.
Always existed. This moment in time has always existed, and it always will exist.
How did you come about this realization? Were you talking like this at 10 to your parents?
I came through this through direct realization.
Right. When? How old were you?
Early 40s.
How old?
Early 40s.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for indulging me.
So since it always has been, it always will. In this moment in time.
This is divine light teaching, everybody. This is divine light or non-duality teaching. This is jhana.
That's one aspect.
What is it?
It's one aspect.
Exactly. And I'm happy to meet you in that. Okay. It's brilliant.
But that's not all I am.
So what else are you?
Everything that exists.
What's your ethnic background?
What does that matter?
Yes! No, I want to go into this. This is what I want to go into. What's your ethnic background? Are you that? Are you that? Are you your lust?
My ethnic?
Are you your lust? Do you feel lust as a human being? Desire, sexual attraction, that kind of thing. Are you that also?
Of course.
Okay.
Well, if I am everything that exists... And everything
but would you
will
say
exist,
it's the actual manifestation?
How could anything be separate from me? It can't be. Only in this world where we take, temporary identity, pretend that we're within our skin, then you can say separation. It's like the forest and the trees. Is it a forest or is it a bunch of trees? Is this a crowd? Is this a group? Or is it a bunch of people? It depends on how you look at it. It's just perspective.
So what's your nationality?
My nationality is omnipresent.
What's your favorite food?
What's your favorite food?
Coconut. What's yours?
My favorite food is milk.
See, this is reductionism, though, and this is one of the limitations of how far you can go on the path of knowledge, because you'll only come out so far. And that's the limitation within the Ramana Maharshi approach.
I'm not using Ramana Maharshi's approach.
This is very much his approach.
No,
you can't get him to budge either.
What I'm telling you
I believe you.
Is from direct experience.
I believe you. I honor you.
Some teaching.
I'm on it. But in the transformation of the experience into language, into a presentation, something is lost from that vastness. And what's lost is the affirmation of all that is and remains bound and ignorant and suffering. And I want to hear about the part of you that still suffers. I'm not interested in your immortal stuff. I know all that shit. I'm that too. But I like to hear when people talk about their suffering, actually, not about the absolute.
That's not where the question began.
I know, of course not. This is not an argument. This is just a play here. We're just playing.
And it feels more like a game than a real teaching.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Because, just in terms of listening.
In terms of listening,
okay.
It is a game. Absolutely. If there's nothing more than listening going on, how many people think that this is... Hold
on
a second.
Can I ask you a question? Do you have anything to learn? Anything at all?
Oh, yes.
Good.
I learned a lot from this discussion. And I'm processing it. It goes into my memory. My memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's not all dirty talk. You understand? The ego is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
The non-finite is not bad. It's not evil. It's not sinful. It's not karmically involved and all of that.
If you're getting that from what I'm saying, you're not reading me correctly.
I think it's implicit in your approach totally.
No,
I think there's
all.
Negation in your approach.
No, not at all.
Anyway.
No, not at all.
Okay.
If when you embrace all that is, there is no negating anything. If someone comes to me and says, God is this, but God is not that.
Right.
My response is, how can you separate God out? If someone tells me Bhakti Yoga is better than Raja Yoga, or Raja Yoga is better than Christianity, I'm saying, one part of God is not better than another part of God. If someone tells me physical reality, like is so common in the Eastern approach, is looked down upon, I say, no, it's God's creation. How can you, it's like looking at your hand and saying, my hand's not as good as my heart. my heart's not as good as my head.
This makes sense. This makes sense intellectually. Yes.
That makes sense experientially to me.
Okay. I honor that.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes.
I just have to ask you something. When the planes crashed into the Twin Towers.
Yes, I saw it live.
Was that the divine crashing into the divine?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. I'm asking you.
Yeah.
When the American military bombed Iraq, was that the divine bombing the divine?
It is.
You see where this goes? It's reductionistic. It's nihilistic. It has no involvement with interpretation or history or personality. It's not about that, if I may interject that. That's my feeling. That's my take on your answer to his question. See?
How would you answer the question?
I would say that when I saw the planes hit the Twin Towers, the first thing I thought was that my government was up to something, even before all the theories came out. I wasn't interested in like manifesting oneness out of that experience. I wanted to understand what happened. I was wondering, gee, was it the foreign policy? Is it backfiring? Is it an internal job? That kind of thing. Is it neoliberalism producing this in the end? You know, so I went to an economic and sociological understanding. Because if everything is the divine, then nothing is the divine. To say that everything is the divine is also to invoke its opposite, then nothing is the divine. Now, I also want to point you right now to the fact that we've had a really heartfelt conversation, this gentleman, beautiful conversation. And I enjoyed and respect the fact that he didn't back down and that he continually posed what I felt was an authentic sharing here. But I also want to point out the fact that I believe that an atmosphere is being created in this room that is outside of these individual discussions. And I'm just wondering, if you don't mind, if I check in with you to see if that is happening with anyone this evening. Something that is discernible, something that is real. Just one person.
What's your question?
Some inequality of the divine, whatever you want to call it. Yes.
I would say there's definitely an energetic shift that's okay. Palpable. It wasn't a loving feeling to me. It was more like a hostility, aggression.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many people are feeling inner hostility as this young lady is?
I guess.
You mean because of the way we were kind of. Thank you. We were going back and mm-hmm. forth like tennis rackets and tennis balls.
Yeah.
But anything else going on besides that? Look carefully.
For me?
Yeah. In your heart, in your being. That was taking place on the level of something very external. You know, these voices bouncing back like that. What's happening internally?
Well, just now that the energy is focused on me and my heart's beating faster and I'm just a little...
You sure that's why your heart is beating faster?
I get nervous when I'm talking.
Okay. You're very sweet. I don't know why. What is your name?
Catherine.
Okay. I'm David. Anybody? Yes, please. Say something.
I just wanted to ask a completely different question.
Yeah, let's go somewhere else.
Okay. Let's see, I'm going to preface this by saying the basic question has to do with getting high and getting knocked down.
Oh.
Okay, I know that's a good subject for you.
That's a beautiful subject.
So I'm going to give you like...
By getting high, you mean getting liberated, right?
Yeah.
Opening up.
I'm going to give you a little personal history so
go ahead.
You can help me with this a little bit. So on the one hand, I have a very ill son. And he's mentally ill, and in certain states and stuff, actually even when he's like totally stable and in good shape and stuff, he actually talks a lot about enlightenment, and he spends a lot of his time in a lot of inner space kind of stuff, and some people go to him to be around him. He's in a group home. Okay. My relationship to that is, first of all, I'm like having a really hard time focusing on my own growth because I'm so worried about him all the time. And so, like, I'll meditate and I'll get, I can feel the kundalini rising and I can feel I'm expanding, and then all I have to do is think about him and I'm right down on the ground. Because I'm, like, so worried about what's going to happen to him in his life and how am I going to keep taking care of him. And there's this huge, like, and I know that that's happened in other ways in my life where I can't quite let go of my concerns and responsibilities, and I'll feel like, just the other day I got like really open, and I tend to kind of hold myself back and down or something, and I got really, really open, and later in the day I found out some kind of betrayal thing was going on, and I got so angry. It was almost like the whole thing that happened earlier in the day just got broken or something. So I guess my question is one that's been asked of you before, to talk about, like, you have a really good thing happen and then a really bad thing happens right after.
I think it happens to everybody in their own way. You certainly have unique and very painful, something very painful to deal with, what you described.
Yeah, all the time.
But I think if you actually interviewed everyone, you would find some similar occurrence happening, that things can manifest that are extremely obstructive to expansive consciousness. The only thing you can do, from my viewpoint, is continue to offer yourself into your spiritual practice until that misery is simply contained in the other. That all of that relativity stuff is just contained in something else. It's not necessary that you'll, you know, run, it's not, I'm not implying that at that point you'll be running down the street and happy and blissful, but you will have at least worked your spiritual process to such a degree that you will know who you are. And some people go on experiencing a lot of agony even after realization. Some people experience it during realization. Not everybody looks like that peaceful Buddha. I like deconstructing that image so that you can put it aside and find out what your place is in all of this. You know, what your spiritual reality is. Just keep doing your sadhana. Keep offering everything. That's the only thing you have left. Maybe something beautiful will happen to interrupt all of this too and give you a whole new viewpoint. You just don't know what's going to happen. You just don't know. You said he reads enlightenment books and people go see him?
Yeah.
The first thing that came to my mind was, I don't know what your son's condition is, and I don't want to...
Well, he has, like, bipolar slash, you know, schizoaffective or whatever, but and even if he has to go to the hospital sometimes, which happens sometimes, like, I'll get the nurses and doctors and stuff pulling me aside and go, I had the most interesting conversation. Or when he goes to leave, they're all bummed out because he's going.
Well, try to remember the culture in which you live and how so little is permissible in this very screwed up, puritanical, technological, industrialized culture that we live in. This is a question of culture here. Have a spacious view. Just because someone, how many people knew Yuji Krishnamurti? Nobody? That was enlightened insanity. Watch his YouTube tapes and get a different perspective on things. Not that he's always displaying that. Now, there's a man who's totally deconstructed every spiritual teaching. He was a friend of mine. I used to go visit with him when he came to my town. He used to sit down the street from me. Can you feel my love for you?
Yeah.
What does that feel like? You're so much in my attention. And we weren't even meditating, we were just sharing our pain together. So compassion itself has this ability to enlighten. Not typical enlightenment. But even compassion is in that bhakti path. Mm-hmm. You sense this?
Yeah. It just makes me want to cry buckets.
Yeah. That's where it leads. Either that or the other direction, bipolar. Actually. That's why you always need to have some groundedness in the absolute. Otherwise, your bhakti will take you to wild extremes. I went through the bhakti path, too. I'm lucky I can tie my shoes today. I'm lucky I can tie my shoes today and function and know where I am, actually. I got here tonight. It's been happening for 6 years now. I intend to go somewhere. I end up there. I meet nice people. I go home with Orly. He's my partner. It's interesting.
You got help. Somehow it just happened.
Well, within that getting help, there was no help.
Yeah.
You don't want to know about what I went through. Because it won't be good for you to hear.
What it feels like to me is in a massive attention is being focused on us through your form, and you were just exploding with
only
this
that only
feeling.
That is functioning here.
That's what it feels like.
Only
it's just
that.
Like the universe is now in looking at this room through you.
Exactly. Yes, dear.
Did I hear you say that someone who is awakened can still experience incredible atoms?
Absolutely.
So then what does it mean to be awakened?
Right, these are the beautiful questions. These are my favorite topics. My favorite topics. Really, I mean that heartfelt.
Do you have an answer?
We can come up with some answers if you really want. We could do that for, you know, we can continue that.
Just the end of suffering.
That's within the non-dual aspect. That's what's in the yonic aspect. When the mind is purified and cleared, it knows that it is the immortal. It knows that it's not this human form. Did you hear the beautiful dialogue I had with that gentleman and what he was asserting? He's speaking from the viewpoint of that illumined non-duality. That's how it speaks. That's if you speak it out of your mouth, if you translate that experience into your speech, that's what it sounds like. I was never born. The I is unmanifest. The I has never come into being. But there's more to you than merely that pure I. Unless you choose to seclude yourself and then meditate in that and deliberately create a kind of samadhi about it. You know what samadhi means? You create a kind of meditative absorption around that experience. Then you can go deeper and deeper into it. It becomes more and more in the absolute, and perhaps you won't want to eat so much. In this culture, it's not done because it's not supported. But if you go to India, if you go to Rishikesh, you'll find people sitting off in little caves and other places, isolated, secluded, inducing this state of deep non-duality, but in a very precise manner. So that relativity is deliberately minimized, perhaps even obliterated. Right? But what I'm trying to get at is this is only one aspect still. No matter how much you dwell on it, you still have a body mind. If you're going to be in relationship with other human beings, you're going to get hurt. It still happens. Adi Da talks about this. Read his books. Shambhala, The Path of the Warrior by Chogyam Trungpa, he talks about the brokenheartedness. Who has read that book? Why do you think he's talking about this? So if you're involved in an emotional path, you're going to feel a lot of pain. That's all that's about. Bhakti paths, devotional paths, are expanding pain and joy to the infinite level.
And bipolar.
Yes, it's very bipolar. You could be laughing and crying. Yes, absolutely. And certain types of mental illnesses in these traditions are heralded as great realization. Now it's getting juicy, you see. Mm-hmm. This is what I like to talk about.
The energy shifted.
Feel your heart open with me now. Feel your bhakti happen now. It's happening now. No one's doing it. not about doing anything. Just be relaxed and be who you are and take it step by step. Follow your own path of inwardness, and whether it's through Kundalini or through its bhakti or if it's through non-duality, it's going to happen. It'll happen. And if it's not happening, and if it's not happening to your satisfaction as quickly as you want it to, there's one of two things going on. This is the best that you can do at this time, or you're not seeing David Spiro down in San Rafael enough. Those are the only two reasons. So come on down. I'm giving programs all summer long. I want to get to know people. I don't like people who flit around like mosquitoes. I want someone who's serious. Come on and sit and let's get to know each other. There are several people in this room. We've gotten to know each other over years, many years. We really have shared a lot of feelings, and they see parts of me that if you knew about, you'd never come to see me as a teacher. I'm full of all the typical forms of attachment and delusion. Even in my introduction, my dear friend, the late Reverend Thomas Auburn, makes a reference to me. He says, enlightenment happens even in the most despicable of places. Read the introduction. You don't have to buy the book, just read the introduction. Yes, dear.
How do you know you're enlightened?
Because it's not juxtaposable with anything else. It's like insanity. When you go insane, you just know. It's like when you're in love. If you ask me, have you ever really been in love with a human being? I'd say, yes, I have. How do you know? You just have to go there. And when you go there, the only thing that can come out of your mouth to describe that is, I'm in love. I've been in love. It's the same thing with awakening. You've got to know what you are. You've got to know that you're the unborn if it's going to be a pure delivery. If you're going to deliver yourself purely in the enlightened sense, you've got to know that you have never come into being. And that experience itself will have various levels to it until you get and you crack the very center of separation. And it's great stuff. Don't miss it for the world. You shatter that very core of what you conceive to be this thing in you that is born and dies. The only way you get to that is through tremendous love and tremendous energy and through tremendous surrender, not to anything outer. It's combustion. It's about combusting. Yes. I'm on fire now.
Say more about the part that's not born and not die.
That's it.
So why were you so critical?
That was then. This is now. No, it's not bullshit.
It is.
Well, you need to see bullshit. There's nothing bullshit about it. What makes you think that it's constant and universally repetitive like that? So if anybody comes up to me and says, I'm not born, I don't die, I go, yeah, you're enlightened. Just because someone says something doesn't mean it's happened. I'm not saying it in case of this gentleman. I'm leaving him out of the discussion. It's just between you and me now.
That's fine.
It's okay.
It's pretty egotistical to me for
wonderful.
You to sit up here and say, you're enlightened.
I didn't say I was enlightened. How many heard me say, I am enlightened tonight?
Well, she's asking you, how do you know, and you're explaining.
But I didn't say that. We're talking around the topic.
I think it's more word games.
What's that?
It's more word games.
No, because certain things feel right to say and other things don't feel right to say.
You're up there, so everything you say is right and everything.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. No, this is a good discussion, too. Right. Okay, it is a game.
It's a nice game, it's interesting.
No, it's just what is. No,
it's
I'm not doing. No, you don't even know me. You come in here, you walked off the street, you spent 15 minutes with me, and you want to discuss my spiritual teaching with me?
Well, it's been over an hour, first of all.
Ah, now
it's
you believe
like
in
you
time.
You're
not going to get out of that one. You're finished, both of you. You're finished. Go back to the Ramana books. Stick your head in the Ramana books. Who am I? Is that what you practice?
No.
No, as a matter of fact, she doesn't. She's devotional with yogini. And one thing that's happening here that I would invite you to consider is that, and I'm just, this is an invitation. You seem to make very snap judgments about what people are offering in terms of their responses, what they're thinking, who they are, what they're feeling.
Exactly.
Without knowing anything about them.
So we've done it to each other this evening.
When I'm open to listening to you, I come here to listen to you. I don't
Well, I'm the speaker.
Okay, right, but I'm not making any snap judgments about you. When you talk, And when something happens,
that's my way. That's my way. I'm from federal. I'm from.
Would you be kind enough to just be respectful enough?
I am respectful.
To not interrupt. That's all I'm asking.
Maybe.
I listen.
It's my show.
That's it.
Enjoy
it's
the show.
It's the ego.
It's the ego.
Thank you for bowing to it. Namaste.
Is it yours?
Well, it's divine as well. Definitely.
You're the one who's offended and walking out.
I'm not offended.
Look in the, you are offended.
Offended.
It's written all over you.
I'm not offended at all.
You just don't like my presentation.
No, what I'm seeing is it more and more and more. You realize, do you, have you listened to yourself? Do you realize how many times tonight you have said, I
understand that. I is good.
I know, but to talk about love and not give it universally or equally to everybody that's here.
That's your interpretation.
It is. Good night.
Bless you, brother. You're wonderful. Thank you.
No, I'm not. You hate me. Don't be a phony. Don't walk out trying to save face, for God's sake.
Another one bites the dust.
It's okay. It's okay.
How do you do that?
No, he's okay. They're both okay.
You just held up a mirror. That's a...
Well, you see, that's a nice explanation. It keeps me, you know, from having to take any responsibility. I like it. I'll take it. If you've been with any teacher who's absolutely realized, they don't apologize to anybody, and they'll step all over you. And I've been with the best teachers on the planet. I don't even hang with spiritual teachers for the most part. I've frequented avatars and very great yogis. Those are my lineages. And what I learned is you basically get what they give, you shut up, and you walk. You walk out. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's the way I treat people. If you talk to people who've been around me, you'll see that I have my style. I don't hide my personality. I don't try to pretend that I'm holy. There's a reason why I gave this talk tonight. I don't think they heard a word of it. That holiness is not the same thing as realization, and she walked out with her great ideal of, oh, and why are you giving love equally? And I don't know where they're coming from. And, you know, they were nice people. I wish they had stayed. I was enjoying the content of the discussion, and I was willing to actually work through that, but they didn't want to work through it on my terms. That was their argument, is that everything is on your terms. You're interrupting people. I do interrupt people. So go find a teacher who doesn't interrupt you. You may have to get in the line to see a teacher, and you may have 2 seconds with them. How's that? Right? You write it on a piece of paper. You call them on the phone. Yes?
Do you interrupt us and do that in service of trying to break our structures and our frameworks?
The way I behave, I am not trying to do anything.
You're just being.
I'm just being David.
Okay.
And what comes along with David... Mm-hmm. Then you could speak to my long-term friends about that, what actually happens to people internally. Now, that's not a way for me to avoid responsibility for something wrong that I've done. I've apologized to people. I've called people afterwards at times and said, did I hurt you? I'm sorry. There are certain times I will and do respond that way. When I do, I do. And when I don't, I don't. But I have to believe absolutely in the authenticity of my teaching. And there's one thing that really, really, if I may share it with you all, that really hit me the wrong way was when he was counting the number of times I said the word I. That's precisely what I hate. And anybody who has spent the last significant part of the last 10 years of teaching with me, whenever I talk about these type of people, I always say that they count the number of I's. And that's what they'll hold against me. Who knows Non-Duality Salon, Jerry Katz's website on the internet? Does anybody subscribe to that? I've had multiple submissions to that. In a 4 or 5 paragraph deconstruction of Advaita Vedanta, which I sent several years ago, which was published, one person's critique was that I used the pronoun I in my... They didn't care about what I wrote about. They didn't care about what I said and whether it made sense or not. It was that, look, he used I. We know this guy's a fake. So. Jim, you wanted to ask something or say something.
No, I just, when you were talking about the I's, you know, the Buddha used the pronoun I innumerable times.
Oh.
And he didn't even believe in the existence of self. I just wanted to toss that out.
I like consulting with you on Buddhist practice. You know the Kali, the image of Kali wearing the skulls? Those are the heads of yogis and yoginis she's wearing. No, seriously. And demons. She is the supreme lord of the universe. Not as a mythological archetype, as a literal, you know, rendition of that mythological archetype, but she points to a particular kind of spiritual crystallization that occasionally happens in the human race. It happens every now and then.
Just in Sebastopol.
Well, there's Sebastopol Kali, and then there's
I'm going to go home to say, Arlie, what did I do today? Like, my waking mind will reoccur. And then I'll be back and like, oh my God. But people still come.
Yeah.
And we have a good time, and we're honored. We're honored, greatly honored by not just, you know, the atmosphere that you create in the star, which I've commented on many times, the fact that you are eclectic in your approach and that you welcome many different voices from many different traditions or people from no traditions, and try to get a common area where people can simply voice a spiritual perspective. But also, you're good friends to Arlie and me, and we really appreciate that, that we have a personal connection, and I've always treasured that with all of you, with Stuart and Amba, and really, you just, you know, you're really my friends, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, friend, for coming tonight.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Could I make a... David has some flyers here on the table where his book is, which is available, and that gives his Northern California schedule for the next month and a half or so.
Okay.
If you can't come to one of his in-person programs, there's a free internet webcast every Wednesday. David is on every Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. And you can look at the friendsofdavidsparrow.org is the website, friendsofdavidsparrow.org, and it will tell you how to be able to get onto the internet webcast. So we have people from all over the world, Hong Kong, Poland, Israel, Iceland. People in Iceland get up at 2:30 in the morning to watch David.
They're
Poland,
cold.
It's 4:30 in the morning. But they're there every week. They're there every week. So it's quite a group.
And I also want to add that we have our custom here of the Dana bowl, the donation bowl, which we share with our speakers to further their work and also to maintain this space. So thank you so much for coming tonight. We look forward to seeing all of you, including David and Arlie.
Sebastopol again, where you were before?
We were driving so much last year. It was